The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Good afternoon, Northern California. Welcome. Just about 5 minutes after the hour, 5 p.m., as we welcome you to another edition of Lifeline. Keeping you company Monday through Friday at this time, as we typically do, addressing issues that impact your life, your world, and your Christian walk. Welcome back to this edition of Lifeline. You know, there was a famous film many years ago starring Frank Sinatra, and at one point in the movie, there's a line as he's pondering the possibility of becoming a father for the very first time, and he opines that you can have fun with a son, but you've got to be a father to a girl. Well, there's a degree to which that might be true, but from the broader perspective, I think most today would argue that boys and girls both need a solid male role model, a father in their life. And of course, God designed it that way. And as we look at the many struggles that we see with the American family today and the difficulties in society, quite often we draw the conclusion that it's either an absent father or a father who grew up lacking the proper modeling from his own parents in order to really understand what it means to be a husband and a father and a man. Taking a look at this topic today, a new book entitled Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood, and its author, our guest today on Lifeline, and certainly no stranger to KFAX listeners, he's Dennis Rainey from Family Life Today, heard weekday mornings at 8:30 a.m. right here on KFAX. And Dennis, it's always a thrill to have you on the program.
Craig, great to be with you. We love the Bay Area and have a ton of listeners out there. We're thrilled to be on your station.
And great for the opportunity to talk about this new book, a book that I think, you know, dealing with a topic that perennially seems to be a challenge to our society today. It's amazing how oftentimes women will call up to a program like mine, and I'm sure you at Family Life Today hear it all the time. They'll just say, I only wish my husband would be a father, or if he could just learn how to be the man of the household. Why is it that this seems to be, for growing numbers of men in our society today, so problematic that they don't understand what it means to be a courageous man?
Well, I think for the past, at least three decades and maybe four, men have been fair game to make fun of, to pull out the gender blender culture that we have and kind of homogenize men and women together and say, other than the obvious physical differences, there really are no differences between the sexes. And God made them male and female. He made them to be two distinct sexes with different assignments and certainly some mutual responsibilities. But I think a lot of men today are confused. They don't know how to do manhood. And as a result, they don't have a vision for what it looks like. And what I did, Craig, was about 12 years ago, I decided I was going to write a book to men and come alongside them and call them to courageous manhood and encourage them in the process. Not beat them up, not take them to task, not shame them, not blame them, but just say, come on, you can do this thing. Let me give you a vision of what it looks like and talk about some steps that a man needs to take in his lifetime. And I'll tell you, Craig, I thought it was going to be an easy assignment, but I had four false starts in writing this book, and finally, on the fifth time, I was able to get it right, and we've slung it out there, and it's really been flying out the door. We had over 20,000 copies sold in a little over 3.5-4 months.
Wow. And you know, when we think of this topic, I wonder how much of the problem, beyond the fact that there's been a breakdown in the lineage of role modeling from father to son and so forth down through the generations. Then, too, I wonder, Dennis, from your research, is part of the problem here, too, also a false understanding of what manhood means? I'm thinking of, for example, a lot of the exaggerated Hollywood images. You know, the guy covered in tattoos that smashes aluminum cans on his forehead, and that somehow is an image of modern-day masculinity.
You know, I think the answer to that question, I'll just take you to the five steps, because I think the answer is found as I kind of walk my way through them. I believe there are five steps a man was designed to have before him as he goes through life. The first one is boyhood. He's designed by God to step out of boyhood into adolescence. That's the second step. And Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 13, when I was a child, I thought as a child, I behaved as a child, but when I became a man, he said, what did he say? I put away childish things. And so God designed a man not to stay on the boyhood or the adolescent step, but to step up to the manhood step and not straddle with one foot in manhood, one foot in adolescence, standing sideways. I believe he designed us to turn our backs on youthful lust, on wanting to play games, on wanting to abdicate responsibility and assume the responsibility of what it means to be a man, get a job, get married, raise children, become a father, and not just father children, but raise children with purpose. And then there's those two final steps that I have that most men don't realize are out there and don't experience the bonus and the benefit of, but there's the mentor, the mentoring step, and then there's the patriarch step. God designed men, I believe, Craig, to multiply their lives out. That's what it means to be a mentor. Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:2. He said, "These things which you have heard from me, entrust to faithful men who will teach others also." There were four generations there. God made men to be a mentor and to be mentored. Every man listening to my voice right now ought to have a couple of younger men who he's mentoring, reaching down, calling him up, and he ought to have one or two older men in his life that are calling him up. We all need it. We were all designed by God to not only help others learn and become disciples, but we were also called to be learners as well and to be disciples of Jesus Christ too.
So lacking all of this, I mean, it's easy to see that one of the fundamental problems then in developing a biblical understanding of what manhood means, that courageous manhood, as you talk about inside the book, is that what we're either skipping some of these stages or steps, or we get them out of order, or perhaps just simply get stuck.
Well, you know, I'm going to read you something from the book, and it's not something I wrote. It's from an advertisement, and I'll not tell you who did the advertisement until I finished the piece. But it's an unlikely source to be writing something so pithy about being a man. Here it is. "Once upon a time, men wore the pants and wore them well. Women rarely had to open doors, and little old ladies never had to cross the street alone. Men took charge because that's what they did. But somewhere along the way, the world decided it no longer needed men. Disco by disco, latte by foamy non-fat latte, men were stripped of their khakis and left stranded on the road between boyhood and androgyny. But today there are questions our genderless society has no answers for. The world sits idly by as cities crumble, children misbehave, and those little old ladies remain on one side of the street. For the first time since Bad Guys, we need heroes. We need grown-ups. We need men to put down the plastic fork, step away from the salad bar, and untie the world from the tracks of complacency. It's time to get your hands dirty. It's time to answer the call of manhood. It's time to wear the pants." Now, Craig, that was an advertisement for Dockers jeans.
Wow.
I wish I'd written that myself.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about an accurate depiction. I mean, as you were reading that, Dennis, I thought, boy, so much of this summarizes what has been the feminization of manhood and the masculinization of femininity.
And Craig, I think within the chest of men, there is a desire to do the courageous thing. I think they really do want to take the step up and make the difference in the world God designed them to make. Today at lunch, I had lunch with a guy who I had met as a result of having a problem in my life that I needed a professional to help me with. And he possessed the skills I needed. And in the process of him fixing what I needed to have fixed, I gave him this book. He calls me back 2 days later and he goes, "I couldn't put it down." He said, "Dennis, the reason is they handed me two babies when I became a father, and there were no instructions on them. I didn't know what it meant to be a man, a husband, or a daddy now. How do I do this thing?" And so I think we kind of reserve heroism and courageous acts for soldiers on a battlefield, which certainly that occurs. But I think today, Craig, some of the most heroic acts that are occurring are men who are pushing away from pornography. They're assuming their responsibility as husbands. They're taking on the load of the covenant that they made with their wives when they got married a number of years ago, and they say, I will not quit. I will love you as Christ loved the church. I'll nourish you. I'll cherish you. I'll face this issue we've got with debt, with illness, with a child, and we'll face it together. And that's the kind of courage that's needed today. And I just think men long for another man to come alongside and put his arm around them and say, you can do this thing. You really can.
Well, look at Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood. Its author, our special guest on this edition of Lifeline, Dennis Rainey from Family Life Today. You can get more information about the ministry online at familylife.com. That's familylife.com. And, of course, tune into the program weekday mornings at 8:30 a.m. right here on KFAX. We'll get back to more of our conversation with Dennis Rainey on his new book, Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood, as this edition of Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to Lifeline. Once again, we're visiting today with a very dear special guest. Many of you, in fact, to spend your mornings with him as part of Family Life Today, weekday mornings at 8:30 here on KFAX. He's Dennis Rainey from Family Life Today. New book out entitled Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood. You know, part of this, I think, disintegration that we've seen, Dennis, over generations, that kind of generational disconnect in areas such as mentoring and patriarch and so forth. I walked into the bank the other day, and there was a woman a couple of steps behind me. And so as I got to the bank door, I pulled the door back and stepped aside. And just, you know, prepared to kind of nod my head with a good morning greeting. And instead she turned to me and said, thanks, but I can get it myself. And I thought, you know, all the hard work that my dad went through 40-something years ago, plus training me how to open the car door for a lady, open the door to the grocery store or whatever for a lady, because that's what gentlemen do in polite company. And now fast forward a few decades, and suddenly you're getting yelled at for doing what I had learned to be was just a proper and appropriate manly behavior.
Yeah, and it's common courtesies. We don't think of that being a part of being a real man, but I'll tell you what, my dad was that way. He didn't grow up with a lot of training, but he was a real gentleman, and he treated women with nobility and respect and with honor. And I picked that up from him, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think if there's ever been a need for us to have an epidemic of common courtesy and for men to lead the way in this, training their sons, it's today. And I'll tell you, one of the ways we need to show common courtesies and kindness is when we go through the airport and we go through TSA and we're having to take our shoes off and put our computers in the plastic bins and go through there. Just try this the next time you go through, Craig. As a man, look one of them in the eye and say, you know, I want to thank you for your work. I bet you get a lot of compliments, but I just want to thank you for your work. And you know what I've been told? They've said, I've been spit on. I've been cursed out numerous times. People seldom say thank you. And I've had a number of them come back and say, you know, I really appreciate you expressing a gratefulness to me. You're the first person today. Or maybe the first person in a long time. I think our country is kind of spiraling downward toward more of a barbaric behavior. When men don't behave as men, as God designed them to be, the result just isn't good.
Well, and I think part of it, too, as you underscore inside the pages of Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood, is this disconnect, Dennis, that we are seeing a lack of maturity, an absolute fleeing from any level of accountability or responsibility. And as much as there is this generational disconnect that so many young men and girls, for that matter, that are being raised in single-parent families where there's either not a mom present to model for the kids or a father present. And all of a sudden, this fundamental disconnect in the way God has established our society from a biblical standpoint is, I think, in many degrees causal to this. Because let's face it, if you don't have anybody to model after, then how will you know how to behave when you get to adulthood?
You know, I've got a quote in the book about the boyhood step, and it reads like this: a boy without a father A boy without a father figure is like an explorer without a map.
Mm-hmm.
Boys need men, fathers who are fully standing on the manhood step, reaching down to them on the boyhood step, saying, come on up, son. Here's how you do it. And they talk about how you do it, but they also model how you do it. And I just remember my dad's dad deserted him when he was a boy, along with his other eight siblings. And I don't know where my dad learned how to be a man, learned how to be a father, a husband, but he could have been a victim. But he decided not to be passive, but to initiate. And I believe initiation is one of the essences of masculinity. Passivity is the exact opposite. The easiest thing for a man to do is nothing. I'll tell you a story. I think I told this story in the book, but I went to one of my kids' eighth grade dances at the cafeteria, and when I arrived at the cafeteria, the dance had been going for a while, and the room was almost totally dark, with the only light that was on was over by the door where a bunch of parents were huddled up. And when we walked in the door, the parents said, have you seen that dance they're doing over there? You're not going to believe how vulgar that dance is. You just got to go look. So I kind of thought, this is kind of interesting. The kids are all over in the dark doing something obscene, and the parents are in the light. So I walk over there, and I'd never seen a dance like this. But they were right. It was absolutely off the charts vulgar. And so I sat there, and my hands started getting clammy. And I thought, I'm afraid of a 14-year-old teenage boy who's got pimples all over his face. I'm 45 years old, for goodness sakes. What is wrong with me? And so I just stepped out, stepped up, and I tapped the young man on the shoulder, and I says, hey, knock it off. That's obscene. You shouldn't be treating that young lady like that. And I turned to the young lady, and I said, young lady, you're going to be somebody's husband someday. You're going to be some husband's wife someday, and you need to make sure young men treat you with respect. And I looked over my shoulder, and here comes another parent. He started tapping people, young people, on the shoulder. Billy Graham made a statement. He said, when one person takes a stand, the spines of others are stiffened. Courage begets courage. And I think what's missing today, Craig, is we're not telling enough of these stories of how men have done courageous things. I want to ask you to answer this question right here on the air. This is one of my favorite questions to ask other men when we get together and have dinner and we got time to answer the question. The question is this, Craig. What is the most courageous thing you've ever done in all your life?
Wow.
Now, as you think about answering that, let me tell you what courage isn't. Courage, or what the answer isn't, excuse me. It's not saying, I've never done anything courageous. Courage is doing your duty in the face of fear. It's doing your duty in the face of challenge. It's doing your duty and refusing to do nothing. And all of us have performed numerous acts in our lifetimes that were courageous. And what happens is men don't talk about how they've been courageous in maybe some relationship they had. Maybe it was with their father. Maybe confronting him about alcoholism, confronting him around an affair. I've had those things mentioned as we've talked around the dinner table. You know, courage is not reserved for a battlefield in a foreign country. Courage can occur in all kinds of settings and situations. So, Craig, what's the most courageous thing you've ever done in all your life?
Well, I tell you, thinking through the answer to that, I pondered back to a time in North Korea, going in with a group of fellow Christian broadcasters, and there were a couple of ladies in our group, and we were bringing in some Bibles in with us. That is, of course, a massive no-no. And one of the border guards was about to catch one of the ladies, and I came in and basically created a bit of a distraction, putting the attention off of them and on to me. And of course, I'm carrying Bibles as well. And I thought, well, if somebody's going to end up going to jail here, it's probably better me than them. That was one of the stories that came to mind.
That's good. You had to face fear, and you did your duty. You stepped up. And you know, I just think with this movie coming out this weekend, Courageous, we've been interviewing Alex and Stephen Kendrick on our broadcast, Family Life Today. If you missed it today at 8:30 on Family Life Today, you can go online, listen to it. You really ought to listen to the interviews of these guys, because I think God's up to something, calling men back to courage, specifically courage around being a man, being a husband, and being a father, and caring about our community. Craig, I think today what is happening in community after community across our country is evil. Evil is preying upon our children, our families, and it's eating them alive. And some of the evil is being pumped into our homes at our own volition and choice around choosing pornography. And so for some men, the most courageous thing they need to do is break an addiction. They need to step away and step out of something that has control of their lives and step up and say, you know what? I'm going to be the doorway through which light and righteousness gains entrance into my home, not sin.
So much of this, evil. Dennis, is about making the right choices. And I want to pause on that point, allow our listeners to ponder. We're going to take a brief timeout, come back to some more observations. Our special guest today, Dennis Rainey, host of Family Life Today, the broadcast weekday mornings at 8:30 a.m. right here on KFAX. Just go to familylife.com. That's familylife.com, where you can hear not only the podcast of today's broadcast of Family Life Today, but also get information about ordering a copy of Dennis's latest book, the one we're discussing right now, Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood. A brief timeout, back with some more insights from Dennis Rainey as this edition of Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to this edition of Lifeline. Craig Roberts along with our very special guest. He's Dennis Rainey, host of Family Life Today. Again, the new book, Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood, available through Bay Area Christian bookstores as well as through the Family Life website, familylife.com. That's familylife.com. You know, just before the break, Dennis, we were talking a bit about learning how to act in a courageous fashion. And you mentioned some of the things that are besetting the American family today, whether we're talking about kids that are trapped under the force of peer pressure that leads to sexually acting out, rebellion, pornography, drugs, the whole list. Some people might say, well, it just seems as if sin is more abounding these days. I have to wonder, Dennis, in the grand scheme of things, is it a case where somehow there's more sin let loose on the world today, or is part of this just a lack of light? In other words, could we stem the tide? Could we turn the direction of what's happening in our society and in the American home today, if more men would step up, be a husband to the wives, be a father to their children, do the kind of mentoring and modeling that is necessary, and in particular, help young boys and girls understand what their responsibilities ought to be and where the limits should be?
Great question. And I'm going to let Isaiah answer or cast a little light on the answer. In Isaiah 59, Isaiah is talking about how bad the day was. He says, we growl like bears, we moan like doves. They're looking at the injustice, the lack of mercy in the culture, and it's just causing a grief that just causes people to shrivel up and to just retreat. And then it says, justice is turned back, and righteousness stands afar off. The picture here is that things get so bad that the righteous stand away from the battle with their arms folded, going, you know, it's just too bad. This is all going bad. This is just, it's really, you know, there's a lot of evil taking place. And then listen to what he says. He says, for truth has stumbled in the public squares, and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. The picture here that Isaiah paints is that truth is not standing up erect in the street for people to see the standard. Instead, it's flat on its face. It's stumbled in the streets. And it says, as a result, uprightness can't enter. And then it says, truth is lacking, and as a result of truth lacking, it says, people who were actually designed by God to prey upon evil, to push back against evil, the very evil we were meant to conquer, turns around and preys upon us. It says, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. I think the problems that we're facing in our nation are a bunch of very small personal battles at grassroots America, that if those who profess to follow Jesus Christ would begin to turn around and prey upon evil and push back against evil and say, you know what, that's indecent, like I did in a bookstore in Grand Central Station in Manhattan about 6 or 8 months ago. I was there and I walked by a book, and it had a title to a book it's a curse word, except it's a vulgar curse word. And I didn't go up with a Bible and beat the guy up who owned the store, but I just have to tell you, I was getting ready to buy some stuff, and I'm not going to buy anything because I'm really offended by your book. And it resulted in a very healthy conversation between that shop owner and me. And you had to wonder, how many people have walked by that book? I saw a little kid looking at it, a six-year-old kid. And indecency, vulgarity, evil is encroaching in our society, and the statement that was made, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do what?
Nothing.
And so guess what? That's what we do. Because we think it's somebody else's battle. It's not mine. Well, you know what? I'm not trying to fix every evil. I can't. There is a lot of evil today. Back to your original question, do I think things are more evil today? I don't think so. I think evil has more access to our lives in terms of privacy in our homes today than has ever existed. The internet being piped into our homes, cable TV, pornography is destroying a generation of boys. The average age boys are now being taught to look at pornography is not 13, 14, 15, and 16. It's ages 8, 9, and 10. And the hardwiring of a boy's emotional system and sexual system are not connected. And we don't even have any idea of how the devil of hell is destroying young boys and their manhood in its very inception, in the germinating stages of what it means to be a young man. And that's my assignment as a dad, to attempt to build the truth into my life, into my family's life, so that truth hasn't stumbled in the streets. Truth is there pushing back against evil.
You know, I like to liken it, Dennis, to the analogy of when you come in, say you've been out for the evening with the family, and you come into the house, the lights are all off, the room is very dark, and somebody might observe as you're walking through the front door, gee, it's pretty dark in here, but what's the first thing they call for? Turn on the lights. This room is not necessarily in a condition of having excessive darkness. What's really happening is there is a lack of light. And I think at the core, what you're suggesting here is that godly men need to turn on the light. And as they do so, that light will dispel darkness, the good will dispel evil. And then, as you talk about the stages, the steps of a man's life, and as he learned how to apply the principles from Scripture to lead and to protect and to serve and to model and to defend our children, we can make a significant difference in spite of the fact that, as you suggest, you know, evil's got an easy pipeline into our homes these days with the internet and cable television and all of these things that surely make parenting today certainly more difficult. Right. But not impossible, because we have a weapon that God has given to us that is as strong today as it was when that book was first written.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer gave his life, I believe, in his early 30s for his faith in Germany. He refused to join Hitler's army and was ultimately became a martyr for his faith in Christ. But he made this statement. He said, "It's the righteous man who lives for the next generation." Someone else said, "Our children are the living messengers we send to a time we will not see." Here's the question for a man, a father, a grandfather, maybe a single guy. What kind of message are you going to send to the next generation? What's your imprint on other people's lives for Jesus Christ that leaves the mark of God's goodness, God's mercy, God's love, God's grace, to imprint that on the next generation's lives. So they're going to make a difference when you're gone.
So you're suggesting, Dennis, even today, as we see a lot of debate about the debt ceiling and how we are passing this huge amount of indebtedness on to future generations, to our children and our grandchildren, that perhaps for the Christian man, the question of what we're going to leave, the legacy that we will leave for future generations, is one of an even grander and more critical and more serious answer, isn't it?
There's, in my opinion, the battleground for the nation, we certainly have to have fiscal responsibility. We have to have godly leaders in Washington, D.C., and the state houses of all 50 states. But I'm going to tell you something. America has survived political corruption. It cannot survive the breakdown of its most basic unit, the family. No nation will survive that breakdown. Martin Luther King Jr. made this statement. He said, cowardice asked the question, is it safe? Expediency asked the question, is it politic? Vanity asked the question, is it popular? But conscience asked the question, is it right? And you said it a few minutes ago, Craig. I think it's our choices. The choices we make, deciding to be God's man, and it's why I like the title of the book, Stepping Up. It's just amazing how often men use that with one another. I stepped up. I made the commitment. Whether it's a single guy listening right now who's avoided making the commitment of marriage, there's a lot of guys today prolonging adolescence, wanting to be single and have fun and not assume responsibility well into their 30s. There are even those who are sociologists, Craig, who are recommending that we prolong adolescence for another 10 to 15 years. That's not the solution. That's not the kind of men we need today. We need guys who are willing to say, you know what? Give me the ball. Give me the responsibility. I'm going to fail. I may fail forward, but I'm going to step up. I'm going to attempt to make my mark for Jesus Christ to make a difference. I'm just one man. You're just one man, Craig. But, each of us is given a sphere of responsibility. We try to do our best. I look at my life someday, and the longer I live, the more I believe the cross is the hope for me and all of humanity, because we are desperately sick with selfishness and sin. We have missed the mark. And so it's not a matter of being perfect, but it is a matter of stepping up in faith and saying, God, I want to be your man.
We so often will take a look at the Sunday football game or the results of the baseball or basketball game and opine about certain players and say, you know, so-and-so just needs to step up. Maybe it's time now for each and every man in the faith to take that own advice. Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood. The new book, by the way, available through the Resource Ministry of Family Life at familylife.com. That's familylife.com. The broadcast, Family Life Today, weekday mornings at 8:30 a.m. right here on KFAX. And the author of Stepping Up, A Call to Courageous Manhood, our special guest on this edition of Lifeline, Dennis Rainey. Dennis, as always, an education to visit with your brother. Appreciate your time today, and we'll catch you on the radio, as they say, tomorrow at 8:30 a.m.
It's a privilege, Craig. Great to be with you.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
And with that going, we shall go to work.
All right.
Let me hear your level just a little bit, Pastor.
1, 2. Hello, hello, hello.
Yep,
can you hear me?
That sounds just fine. All right. Very special guest joins us on the program today, who went from almost 30 years enforcing the law to now teaching God's law. We're pleased to have join us today the founder and senior pastor of Spirit of Truth Church Worldwide, Pastor Joel Jones. Pastor Jones, a delight to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure to talk with you and to hear you, that voice.
And likewise, feel the same. Feel the same, brother. Well, we've got much to talk about today. First, let me say a congratulations on the anniversary. I understand the church this year just marked 10 full years in impacting that greater Fairfield area for Christ.
Yes, sir. I don't know where the time went, but it flew by, and it's hard to believe that I've been pastoring now for 10 years after coming from a background where I knew nothing about the Lord and had not met him. And so now all I can say is look at God. He has a plan and a purpose for our lives that you could never imagine. So I'm just thankful to be on board and that he thought enough of us to teach us and move us. And we're still learning, but it certainly is an accomplishment that we give to God in all things, to give the credit to him for sustaining us.
Let's talk a bit about your spiritual path, your spiritual journey. And listeners, I think, are going to be fascinated to hear and learn how broad and wide your background is. I alluded in my introduction to the fact that you served as a police officer, both in the cities of Oakland and in San Francisco. You also served as a deputy sheriff sergeant. In addition to that, you spent some time in your younger years on the gridiron, and I understand all of this began back in Chicago. Tell us more about that that pathway and some of your life growing up.
Well, I'm from Chicago, and my mother and father had 13 children, and I was the last of the 13. I was the 12th, and so she had me at the age of 41 against doctor's orders, but I came up through Chicago, and Chicago was a place that was so polarized that I had a lot of scholarship offers to go to schools of higher education, higher learning on scholarships, and I could do the classwork. So I had everything from Dartmouth to Long Beach State, California, Iowa to play ball. I didn't really care football at the time, but it was a way to get out of Chicago. And so I happened to have the skill to play, and I was what they call a blue chip player. So I didn't know at the time that the scouts were scouting me. I just knew that it was a way to probably earn a better way of life, earn a living, provide for my wife, who we met at 14. I wanted to take her with me. And so I went away to explore the possibilities. And that's what one of the best things, not to disparage Chicago, but I needed to get out in the world and learn. And this was a way to do it, I thought. So I took that offer.
You mentioned your wife, Annalisa, with whom, of course, you co-pastor there at Spirit of Truth Church. You guys were high school sweethearts.
Yes. We met at the age of 14. We were both 14. And I met her through her brother, and they lived across town. And I would walk somewhere between 5 to 10 miles to her home. I didn't have a car. And I'd pick her up from work and walk her home and the whole bit. And I didn't know we were going to get married, but we went steady all through high school. And then at the age of 19, after I knew that I was going to be out in the world, one of my coaches said, well, what about your girlfriend? And I said, well, hopefully she'll wait for me. He said, no, I wouldn't leave her behind if I were you. If you don't get her, somebody else is going to. So I thought about it, and we married. And I would say that this was all God. I knew nothing about girls, and I didn't have a car or anything else yet. She stuck with me, and we're still together today. Of course, now we know much better. We know that the Lord had his hand on us, and he charted our lives. There's no way this could happen without Jesus. And he knew. He knew that, okay, that kid's a long way off, but I'm going to guide him to the water. And he did.
And gave you a wonderful helpmate along the way. You kids, I'll call you.
Yes, rarely
at our age are we called kids, and that's a compliment. But you've been married for a long time now. In addition to your own children, your grandparents too now.
Yes, I have four grandchildren. We've been married now. Gee whiz, I think it's 40 years.
Yeah, you better come up with the right number.
Yeah.
You're going to be in trouble if you don't.
The good thing about it is sometimes neither one of us can remember. We got to do the math.
You just say, honey, I don't recall you were there. Can you remind me?
Yeah, we've got a going steady anniversary where we first went steady that she wants me to remember that date. And then we have our anniversary. Wedding anniversary that I have to remember. So we celebrate two anniversaries. November 2nd and April 2nd.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, let's talk a bit about some of that experience. So leaving Chicago, and as you indicated, this was kind of a ticket to get out of town and to improve your situation in life and have educational opportunities. The scouts indeed were having an eye on you, and you had a chance to play pro ball for a season in your life. And then you pivoted to an interesting new direction, and I alluded to this as well in my opening remarks. You had a very long and illustrious career in law enforcement. What led you down that path?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I guess, Craig, when I ended my last year, I had an injury to my knee, and I tried to rehab the knee. But back in those days, the physical therapy and the wasn't what it is today. And if you had a meniscus injury, it could take you out for a year. Nowadays, players come back in a few days, a few weeks. But the point is, having surgery on my knee was something I couldn't do. So I had to play with that injury, and that took me down a step in my speed and endurance. I couldn't work out like I wanted to and rehab the knee. And I would go to a team, such as when I went to Dallas and for tryouts, and just couldn't make the final cut. And so by the time I did, I needed to make a living. I needed to get into something worthwhile. And I was courted by a few police officers. Just as the scouts came to me, then people, I was training at a gym, and there were officers in the gym, and there were a lot of different people from all walks of life, some savory and some unsavory. And the officer said, you know, you'd make a really, we could use you in law enforcement. You could help children. You could help young people. You can mentor them. You train, and you could do this and that. And they said, if nothing else, you could go to the academy and make money and chart the next course of your life. And I happened to be in California, and California was such a melting pot of all races out here. It was something that Chicago wasn't. And so I said, if I were to do police work, it would be much better to do it out here than at home. And so I did. I opted to try it out, and it just grew on me. I was like football. It was easy for me. And, so I wound up staying in law enforcement, and then I wound up moving to the sheriff's department and as a sergeant, and I retired there. And that was all God. It was something that I never really thought about. My idea was to go back to school and maybe go to grad school and get into social psychology is what I was interested in doing, or law, pre-law. And my daughter's an attorney now, but that was my goal for me at the time. But God just had this different plan for me. I can't even put it into words, that I would serve the public. But of course, with police work, I wound up doing heavy duty police work. I wound up going into the door first and doing the entry team and SWAT team type of work. And but again, I see it as a stepping stone to what the Lord had for me. Because when the Lord came to me, he said, now you've been locking them up for years, but now you'll set them free through Jesus Christ. And I remember that to this day when the Spirit told me that. So something completely out of bounds in my planning. And that's how I followed the Lord ever since I met him. I didn't know him then. But I know that God brings you to an area of understanding, and then the puzzle pieces start to fit together. You just didn't know it at the time.
Our conversation today with Pastor Joel Jones, senior pastor at Spirit of Truth Church Worldwide, continues right after this.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.